Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Shaq, and with the NBA Finals in full gear, you know we're all over it on the Big Podcast with Shaq. Can the King bring another title to the land, or will Steph and KD make history again? We got a cover like no one else, plus the biggest guests from sports and entertainment, tons of laughs, and the top stories every week, all summer long. Just go ahead and crown those champs. The Big Podcast with Shaq, with a new episode every Monday at Podcast One.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Welcome to CarCast. I'm Adam Pearl. That's the moderator.
Hi.
Matt DeAndre over there. What's going on, man?
Oh, trying not to sneeze.
You got a seasonal allergies?
Nah, I don't know what happened. Just a little bit of a chest congestion. Maybe you can hear it. But
yeah.
It's good.
It's going around. I mean, never stops here, but it's going around. Matt's sick, the porcelain punisher over there. He likes to toggle between actual illness and then seasonal allergies. That's his thing. But here we are. The car, we got a car for sale.
Yeah.
It's on Bring a Trailer. It's a Z car, 280ZX. It's the Fitzy car. It's a cool piece. It really...
So many great stories about this car. Your stories and its history.
Yeah. Jim Fitzgerald is the winningest SCCA driver on the planet, right?
Over 350 career wins.
All done in this one car.
So the car's got a lot of miles?
It's got a lot of history. Now, he drove. He was Newman's teammate. He was, I guess, an instructor up at Road Atlanta. He did everything. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you recall this, or if you heard this, but we were hanging out at Maria Menounos' house last night, and we're talking to Sly Stallone.
Yeah.
I was talking about Driven.
What a fascinating guy, by the way.
It was interesting.
Such a great conversation.
We talked for a long time, but there was a guy who was a pro wrestler, and he was sitting next to me, and at some point he just said, I was at St. Petersburg where that guy died in 87. And
oh,
I said,
that was
Jim Fitzgerald. That was Newman's partner. And he was like, yeah, I was living there. And I remember the race. And I was just a weird, I've never, you know, I made the movie. I talked to everybody. He wasn't even, we weren't talking about Jim Fitzgerald. He just said, I was at a race in St. Petersburg in 87 when a guy died.
Which is also weird because that guy is Sean Waltman. He's X-Pac. He's a WWE wrestler, former wrestler. I didn't even know he was a car guy. He's always been here, and he's looked at the cars, but he never really brought it up. He's like, "Hey, I went to races as a kid."
I guess, and you know, I don't know if he was a kid. I mean, I don't know. He's not young. He's not old. But 87. To you as a kid, to me, you know, I was just living in an apartment with a bunch of dudes in North Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like I was young, but I wasn't in high school.
Wow, he was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that driver and his personal car, not his personal grocery getter, but his personal race car later on is the car that's for sale. And it's for sale. Not because we don't love it, but it's for sale because there's so many projects, there's so many other cars, there's so many, there's only so much room, believe it or not, and we're just trying to thin the herd. But it's always with an eye on other vehicles.
Yeah.
Usually more expensive.
Yeah. So the Fitzy car is the 280ZX. It's a naturally aspirated straight six.
It's got the big flares on it and the big rims on it.
It looks cool.
It's a good-looking car, yeah.
You've raced it.
Yep.
Laguna Seca, at Sonoma.
Yeah, few times at Laguna Seca.
Our epic story of Les and leaving the tire gauge on the back of the car. Yeah, that's the car.
That's the car.
Yeah.
History.
Yeah.
Owed a piece of Les's history. I'm not sure whose history. But this car ran the runoffs in 80, 81, and 82. Or was it 81, 82, 83? It ran like 3 years of the run. I think it was 80, 81, and 82.
Right. And it's It's called the designated hitter because, as legend has it, it was there to take out Freddie Baker and his fast Jag.
Yeah,
it was on the pole or on the inside or outside of on the, you know, in number two slot, but on the pole, on the front.
It was race weekend, and the night before the race, there was a like a driver's dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And as a joke, somebody gave Fitzgerald his name tag, but his name tag said designated hitter on it.
Right.
And then the next day, like lap one, he crashed into Freddie Baker's Jaguar.
Well, it was sort of that.
And they're like, was that intentional? Was it not intentional?
And again, these things get lost over time. Les swears by it. But the deal was this guy, Freddie Baker, and this Jag was going to whoop up on everybody.
Yeah.
And the...
There was a rivalry. It's been going on for a while. Like they.
Well, I think the story was is Dotson had been winning in the past, and their winning streak was going to come to an end because of this guy Freddie Baker in his Jag,
which is like a 6-year-old Jag,
right? Unless somebody could take him out, in which case the Dotson winning streak could continue. Now I think he did hit him.
Yes,
they did continue the race.
Yes,
and Fitzy got black flagged at some point.
Yeah,
did. That's what we know. And did Baker on to win the race?
He did. And I don't remember if Fitzy was black flagged during the race or after they were like, you're disqualified.
Right. All right. So that is the car. And
then obviously the car turned into this legend. It has they printed designated hitter stickers and they put it on the car. And,
right.
And if you buy the car, you come with a sheet of these stickers that have never been used. You can... Put them on your lunchbox.
So,
your trapper keeper.
Yeah, and you may go to trailer.
Bring a trailer.
Bring a trailer. Sorry, go to
bring a trailer.
I'm thinking about Dennis Prager. Go to nosafespaces.com. Go to bring a trailer and check it out.
Yeah, the auction ends on Tuesday. So as you're listening to this, you have a few days, the weekend and a couple days. So
right,
you can jump on there.
All right, you were driving your Ford F-50 with the 10 speed in it.
The F-150 with a 10-speed transmission and an EcoBoost motor.
Yeah.
And I'm not a truck guy by any means, but what an impressive truck.
What do you think that does for gas mileage?
Well, the way I've been driving it, probably not much.
But it theoretically, you get the twin-turbo EcoBoost V6. You get the 10-speed transmission automatic versus... Let's say in the past, a small block, you know, V8, 302 or 289 or whatever size they'd gotten into, and then like a 5-speed automatic, you must be getting 10-15% better mileage.
And it shifts a lot more. Like it puts a lot more effort into finding the right gears, and it does skip shift. Like on acceleration and deceleration, it'll go 1 to 3 to, you know, to
right. You know, it's an interesting thing, which is I never really thought about the transmission. I've been thinking, I always thought about the engine and the most efficient engine, the most horsepower and the most torque. And then how do we take the smaller engines? Well, we put a turbo on it, but we don't just put one turbo because that's going to create the lag. We want the 2 turbos or the 4 turbos to create the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But if you really think about it, as you get that engine with that turbo, especially turbo. Now, look, when you're running just a big block diesel, who cares? Because you're just always in the torque band.
Right.
You're always right in the sweet spot. You just mash your foot, and that's it. You have, you know, 650 square inches of torque or foot-pounds of torque at 1,800 RPM or something. So who cares? But if you're running a smaller displacement, like, what is it, 3.5?
Yeah, it's 3.5.
So you got a 3.5, which is... certainly by American standards, a very small displacement engine, and you're pulling a pretty big truck, and the truck could be pulling a trailer.
Yeah.
So how do you map that engine? Well, now let's go to the transmission, because the transmission is really going to keep that thing in its power band. And the thing about that engine, I mean, if you want to take it to an extreme, you know, the V6 engines with the turbos on them in the Newman race cars can either have no horsepower or shitload of horsepower, just depending on where you're at in the RPMs in the band.
Yeah,
you know, so the transmission is really kind of interesting in that it's very important to keeping that small displacement engine working, because the thing about that engine is, obviously, you can't just sort of throw cubic inches at problems anymore. You need it in its band,
yeah,
like constantly. And the thing about the small displacement is they're only working when they're in that band, that zone.
This transmission is complex. It's actually a joint venture between GM and Ford. Mm-hmm. And so we have this 10-speed transmission, one version in an F-150, and then another version in like the new ZL1 Camaro.
Yeah, saw one the other day.
And obviously, because they're so electronic, you know, they're just so controlled by computers and stuff now, I don't think it physically has 10 gears in it. I think it simulates gears by having probably like an actual 6 sets of gears.
Interesting.
And then simulate other type of gears by combining different cogs, basically. You know, I couldn't say for sure exactly how many are in there, but it creates this 10-speed transmission, and it's very smooth. It's very seamless because there's less of a dramatic change in the engine speed when you're switching.
Right.
You know, when you're going from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 on your 4-speed, you've got to get a lot of RPM before it could switch, and then it really bogs down. This thing shifts all the time, and you don't even notice it. You know, I reset the computer when they delivered the truck like 5 days ago, and I did take a trip to San Diego and back to pick up a car and bring it. So I've been averaging 16 miles per gallon total, but that includes a trip to San Diego and back with a car.
Towing.
I think it's probably like getting 17 normal and maybe 15 with the trailer.
Now it kind of begs the question about the diff and the rear end. Like, makes me think, I wonder when we're going to start moving gears around and doing some variable stuff with those. As well.
Yeah.
Now, that seems a little more locked in stone, but on the other hand, these guys are going to town, and they're realizing that gearing is a big deal when it comes to performance and economy and all that stuff. And I'm just wondering, I have no idea what's going on in the rear end, but I bet the rear end may be next.
Yeah, well, this has the tow package on it, so I'm pretty sure one of the gauges I see, I was looking at it, was like, I see oil pressure, and I see temp, and I see another temp gauge, but with the gear around it, and I realize that's gear temp.
Right.
Or
rear gear temp.
I assume so. I mean, I guess it could be transmission temp, but...
Could be. All right. Let's see. Questions?
It's probably transmission temp.
Your questions? Your thoughts? Yeah, so we talked to Stallone about Driven. His F1 are turned into indie movie.
Yeah.
He wasn't happy about it.
But he wasn't happy with how it ended result, but man, the pitch of the movie that he gave us,
yeah,
of what he wanted it to be,
yeah,
is such a good movie.
Yeah, more F1, but don't worry, there was I limited the Cobra talk to 25 minutes. We'll put a cap on our Cobra talk.
It was like a 2.5-hour conversation.
Did he give you an insight into the sequel? Because I remember he tweeted that
he had so much insight about this movie, his ideas for the movie, his life during this movie, and yes, he had ideas about a sequel or a reboot. I'm not sure, but
yeah, he definitely had thoughts and
like serious thoughts.
Serious thoughts. I don't remember. Like, first off, I don't know how much of this information he wants out there, but I do remember. When I brought up Cobra to him, which was immediately, he was explaining that this is something that he's going to be revisiting.
Yeah. When you say immediately, it was like, hey, can we talk about Cobra? My name is Adam. Yeah, he jumped right in, though. So
yeah, I said, hello, my name is Adam Cabrola. How do you like that, Cabretti?
Yeah.
I'm going with Cabrola.
Yeah, he had a lot to say. I think there's a very good chance you'll have him come on to ACS one day.
Yeah, one day soon. All right, I want to tell you about Lone, back for its fourth season with a crazy new twist. Yeah, rules have changed, man. 10 survivalists are still dropped in unforgiving wilderness, but now they got 5 competing teams, brothers, fathers, sons, a married couple, and it's a different kind of survival show. Besides their teammates, they're truly alone. So that's it. It's not the cameraman. It's not standing there. You know, when they're talking about, oh, I need water. And you realize there's a guy standing there eating a granola bar, holding the camera. That ain't this. They give them the cameras. They film themselves. So they're truly alone. There are no gimmicks, no forced challenges. The teams are split, and they have 5 items each. To win, they must survive North Vancouver Island. It is $500,000 at stake, by the way. This is not chump change. New season premieres Thursday. That's coming up this Thursday, right? Where are we? Yeah, this Thursday. And 10 o'clock, 9 central on History, man. History.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Let's see. What else? You got questions there, Max Pana?
Sure do. And if you guys want to write in, just go to carcastshow.com. And you can leave a little letter for Adam and Matt to answer. Also, we have some What Can Adam Complain About submissions on our Facebook, too. So we'll get into that in a sec. But Kenneth, he's writing in from Tennessee. He has a question about vintage stock cars. Get it on. Love the show. Love Matt. Thanks for keeping it going. I know you weren't into NASCAR, nor am I, but you can get some used stock cars cheap around here, especially in North Carolina. Bring a trailer. Just had one that was going for less than $10,000. I've heard about guys in my youth buy and sell cars that won races for less than $10,000. Do you think there will ever be a market for them? I understand that a Dale Earnhardt Daytona car would be valuable, but do you think a car driven by non-legend would ever bring in some bucks?
Stock cars for $10,000, like full stock, or like the lower level, you know, like I went to Irwindale and did a few laps around the oval, and arguably a stock car.
Right.
That is not what Dale Earnhardt Jr. runs.
We have kept a very close eye on the vintage race car market. And the way the vintage race car market works, it's sort of like how the housing market works, which is, well, all the mansions in Beverly Hills and Bel Air go for, you know, millions of dollars, and then people start rumbling. They start go over the hill. What's in Studio City, you know? Then those start going up in price, and then they move a little more deeper. Well, what's in North Hollywood, you know? And at some point, you realize the little dinky joints in North Hollywood are selling for what the stuff in Beverly Hills sold for 15, 20 years earlier, you know? And you're like, God damn, I could have had that thing in Bel Air for the same price as the shitbox. And so, you know, it's the same with everything. It's the same with vintage race cars, you know? When we got started, 10 years ago, it was pretty much, well, it's got to be Ferrari or it's got to be Porsche.
Yeah.
You know, we got no real room for Japanese stuff. We got no real room. There's a couple of English stuff we'll take, like Jaguar, but not others, you know. And there wasn't this place. Like if you had a Lancia, Evo, whatever, rally car, like there's no market for Lancia, you know, or rally cars. There was no market for Japanese cars. There wasn't any market for anything. It had to be German or Italian, and it had to be, you know, 50s, 60s. There certainly nothing in the 80s. They weren't going to, that wasn't vintage. We needed vintage, you know. Well, now we're living in a world where cars in the 80s that are Japanese are selling for $250,000. You know, there's stuff out there, depending on the history and everything. So whatever this was, it doesn't continue to be this. Nothing does. Now that the Ferraris and the German cars are still moving up, they're still
way. And they'll always do well. I mean, overall, that'll go up and down, but the overall trajectory is going up.
Right. And so now you're looking at a Japanese car for $250,000 when 10 years ago you were looking at that Porsche for $250,000 or even that Ferrari for $250,000, like the house in Bel Air. Now you're living in the place in North Hollywood, and that's just the way the market goes. So in terms of and the last of these cars to be touched has been NASCAR. And I don't mean the last, but what I mean is all the road racing stuff and even the rally stuff has been, you know, snapped up. There's a market now. And even the vintage dragsters and funny cars and stuff, those had no market, right, a few years ago. Now, those with the Crackle Fest and everything, those are all going up, right? I don't know that those have gone up as fast, but they've gone up as well. So the NASCAR is kind of the last group.
Yeah, it's been weird because I've seen them pop up at auctions, but they're usually like the charity cars, like the race team or somebody or like a Chip Ganassi would donate a car and it would pull good money.
I saw
mostly to raise something for, you know, money.
I saw like a 68 Bobby Allison, you know, Galaxy or something, and they wanted 200 for it. Like that car, those cars were, there's no such thing as 200 for that car 10 years ago. That was 30 grand.
Well, the one thing we've definitely noticed is right now the market is bad. I think overall the market is low for collector cars. We watch a lot of the auctions, all the auctions, let's face it, all the auctions, and the market is pretty low, but the race cars, the vintage race cars, seem to be a little bit less affected by the down market. And I think it's because...
I don't agree with that. I don't think it's less affected. I think they're marching on. They've just been moving forward. I feel like the other ones have dipped, and they haven't dipped less. They've just been moving on.
Right.
But they were, because they were undervalued in the first place.
Yeah, maybe they were in a bad market, or maybe they just never were really appreciated at the time. But, you know, I think so many of these race cars are one of one or one of two or one of three, and that makes them special. And the ones with more race history makes it special. And, you know, you and I were just talking the other night about, you know, you start attaching Le Mans or Daytona or something like that, any of that race history to a car, and it immediately adds a significant bump in value to that car.
Right.
So, I mean, I think, I don't know about the $10,000 stock car that nobody's ever heard of, if that's going to go up in value, but you're starting off at a pretty inexpensive car, so I guess there's potential for it to go up. But certainly the ones with significant race history, they're not inexpensive, but they're definitely collectible.
And I would say this. I think you're much better off finding a car with some history, as much history as you can afford, that is a basket case versus something that's turnkey that has little to no history.
Yeah.
Even if you got to spend X amount to put it back together over the next 5 years or whatever it is, go for all the history you can get, even if the guy's bringing the thing over in crates. And then you put it back to how it was. That car will be worth far more.
Yeah, and I think the race cars will do better in the long run. And I think this is a tough one, but I would say, by and large, as a whole, the race cars are a little bit easier to restore. You know, like if you're restoring a 65 Mustang, there's so many parts and restorers and things available. That's pretty easy to do. It's just time and money. But when you start getting into cars that are far more exotic, then you can't get parts, and you can't really get away with creating parts, you know, like getting a control arm bushings for a Lamborghini 400 GT. You don't really make them. You got to get them, and you got to wait until something comes available in Italy. You got to wait 6 months, 12 months,
right,
whatever, you know, where a lot of the race cars, so much of that stuff is fabricated that you can go in and recreate that stuff and not really devalue the car.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, right, if you're replacing the rod ends or the heim joints of something, that's fine.
Right.
You know?
I agree. All right. Joey Hand, Le Mans, is racing Le Mans coming up now. What
yeah, I think he's calling in right now. We're screening it real quick.
He's
making sure it's him.
What's the date? So he's either out there or going out there, right?
Yeah, it's coming up June 17th, 18th.
Right.
Today is the less than that.
Today's the 9th.
Today's the 9th. So, like, in a week.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been there. Is he online too? Joey?
Yep.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Hello.
Yeah, man.
Joey Han is on the phone. That's Matt DeAndre over there. I'm Adam Carolla, just so we're all caught up. We got the 24 Hours of Le Mans coming up, driving the Ford GT. This is very exciting.
Yeah, man, it is very exciting. You know, we this project started, well, a few years ago almost now, and, you know, we were able to have some big stuff happen last year. You know, we won Le Mans on our first try, and not only that, but Ford's 50th anniversary of winning in 66 to the day, mind you. And, then we start out this year winning Daytona and running second at Sebring, so it's been a good little roll we've been on since last year. So, yeah, we're trying to do this again, in the 60s, Ford won 66, 67, 68, 69. So we wouldn't mind doing the 50th anniversary of the 67 win also, you know.
I'm pretty sure Ford and Ganassi and everybody else involved agree.
Yeah. We were at the Goodwood Hill Climb a few days after Le Mans hanging around. And they brought one of the cars over.
I think Marino was there.
Yeah,
my buddy Dirk Mueller, my teammate, he was up there too, I think.
Yeah, he was there.
Yeah, so that was kind of fun. I mean, the car, like the mud on the front spoiler was like still wet.
Still there,
you know?
Yeah.
Like it was, they just brought it right on over.
Yeah.
Is it exactly. So? How does the it's three drivers, right?
Yep.
And
how many cars are you fielding the team total?
We're fielding four cars again. Same thing we did last year. We have the two IMSA cars that we run over here all year, and then the two WEC, the World Endurance Championship cars that are based out of England. So, yeah, all in the same banner, Ford, Chip Ganassi Racing. Four of them. They're pretty stellar lineup. I mean, same thing we had last year. You know, I mean, it's when you put that many bullets in the gun, if you will, you got a pretty good chance. A lot of good guys driving. Great team, you know, it's we got a good shot at, but yeah, we have three guys. I don't know if you guys know, but well, you know that Sebastian Bourdais was our teammate last year at Le Mans. He's, you know, he's born in Le Mans, in like the Tete Rouge corner, he says, but he got hurt in the Indy qualifying, so
yeah.
We're gonna miss him because he was with us for Le Mans, you know, all the long races he did with us up until now. So we won Daytona and Le Mans together with him, and so now we're gonna have Tony Kanaan with us this week, which, you know, he's not too bad either. So,
I like cool. Tony. Tony's been here with us in the studio, and we were talking a little bit about racing.
He's a great guy.
He's a good dude. Just overall, just all around good guy, and he's a good wheel man. He was in the car in one of the sister cars at Daytona this year, so he's got 7.5 hours in the car of drive time at Daytona, and then. He does have to learn Le Mans. He's never been there, so he's on a simulator next week doing some stuff, and this week trying to learn. But that's a little different for us, but, you know, we're still comfortable with that. He's a Chip Ganassi teammate, so I think we'll be fine. But, three guys, we'll do about 3.5 hours per driver.
Is it two different classes? Is it two cars in one class and two cars in, or is it?
No, we're all in the same class.
We're all in the same class.
Fighting each other, yeah.
Yeah.
In the GTE class, yeah.
I remember Tony, I think, was explaining to us that when he was a lad, he was asked to go to Senna's place and do a go-kart race.
Yeah.
And he said with a certain, obviously, amount of pride that he beat Senna on Senna's go-kart track. And I said, well, but you understand, like, you were 12 or 13. You probably weighed 30 pounds less than Senna, maybe 40 pounds. And that's huge with a go-kart. So, I mean, it's cool, but he had a huge weight disadvantage. And he said, no, Senna added weight to all the carts. I was like, wow. Is that kind of competitive?
Yeah, sure. Was. I think he was asked not to come back too, by the way. When he won, said us like, yeah, good job, kid. Don't come back.
Yeah. That's a great story to have in your pocket. I'll say that.
Oh my God. What could be better?
Yeah. So when you guys get out there, I'm sure Tony's gonna make you ride bikes around or something. That dude's a sick like mountain biker or road biker.
He's probably
done laps around Le Mans already on his bike.
Probably, yeah. I don't know what he's gonna do. He'll probably bring a bike and ride around, but it'll be good to have him. We'll have a little fitting him in the car will be a little different. You know, he's got some short little legs, so compared to my long legs, extra long legs. So we got to get him fit in. We haven't even when this all went down, our cars were already being shipped, well, flown.
Right.
They were being loaded on the airplane to come to go over to Le Mans to get set up and all that. So he's been in the car, obviously, you know, in a different car, in one of the sister cars, but he hasn't been in Dirk and I's car with us. So we'll probably just need to make a little foam insert for him or something and that he can throw in behind him and then buckle in. But, you know, it's crazy. You can fit so many different sized guys pretty easily into the car and just, you know, do a little loosen the belt and then somebody else tightens it and we'll be good to go.
When do you go out there? How far in advance do you go out? You said the team is already heading out there.
Man, I've already been there and been home. I'm in California. I was there for 3 days. I went over and we did our test day on Sunday, and then I shot back and got home on Monday, back to California, and then I go back on Friday. So I go back over in a couple of days. But I like to come home. You know, my kids are out of school. I like to see my wife, and I'll head back over. And this weekend coming up, so I get over there on Saturday, and then on Sunday, Monday, they have scrutineering in the downtown of Le Mans. It's a small little town. They roll the cars through. There's a stage. You sign autographs. You know, do all the tech stuff, scrutineering stuff. And then we get on track on Wednesday. And Thursday, we qualify. And then Friday, they have a huge parade through downtown Le Mans. It's like 150,000 people. It's unbelievable. And really, really cool part of the weekend. And then we go race on Saturday, about 3:30.
It's weird because it's four to four. But the time I went, they went 3 to 3. And I never figured out why.
Yeah, I don't know why they changed. They do it at Daytona all the time also. They change the start time. I can never figure out what time it actually is. I thought, you could be right, it could be 4. I thought it was 3:30 to 3:30.
Well, maybe they met in the middle, but it was always 4 to 4. Yeah. And then the year I went, I was already late, but now it's more than an hour late because they changed it. It was crazy. Yeah.
Well, if I'm going to make sure when I get there so that I'm not an hour late.
Right, yeah.
It'd be a real drama if I'm starting the car.
Are you starting? That was my question. Are you starting in the car? What's your schedule, your actual driving schedule?
We don't know yet. We just kind of wing it when we get there. You know, we're comfortable with our driver lineup, Dirk and I. It just kind of depends who's feeling it. Last year, Dirk started, but it was in the rain, so I wasn't too upset with that. The race started in total downpour. So he got it going, but you know, I wouldn't mind starting it this year if they want. But you know, it really doesn't matter. It cycles through. You just run laps as hard as you can, and hope you're there at the end. And then that last couple hours, if you got to go dogfight, that's when you do it. But you know, the start of the race and throughout is just keeping your car clean as possible. Not literally, but keeping the wheels underneath it and all the dive planes and the aero stuff on it and just making sure you've got a car to go race at the end if you have to. I mean, in a perfect world, we run away off into the sunset, but, you know, with the competition at the level it is, even with just, you know, thinking of our sister cars, the chances of that are slim nowadays. So, but I will tell you, you guys, you know a lot about the history of racing. You know that, you know, in the 60s and 70s and even the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, I mean, we were still saving cars throughout a 24-hour race. Especially in the 60s, they would run, you know, they'd get it going and they'd find a pace and they'd just save the brakes and save the gearbox and really just try and get the car home, you know. And nowadays it's totally different. We race, you know, we're running these things 95-98% all the time, as hard as we can push. And if the car doesn't make it, the car doesn't make it. They figure out how to fix it for the next time. So, you know, it's a different type of race. It's really like a 24-hour sprint race nowadays. So the level is really high. I mean, the way the safety cars work, you don't get bunched up anymore. So if a safety car comes out, you're held, you're locked in your position.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to lose any time. A minute lost in the pits is a minute you have to gain in actual lap time. So it's very different, but you got to be on your toes. You got to really be hustling the whole time. And you know, that becomes especially difficult in the night. If it gets rain in the night, man, your eyes will be bugging out of your head because, let me tell you, there's no extra light on the Mulsanne straight other than your headlights at 190.
Yeah, unless somebody's in front of you.
How long do you... No one's going to be in front of them. Well, lap traffic.
Thank you.
You say you're in the car for 3.5 hours, but you're refueling sooner than that, right?
Yeah, so it's, you know, 3.5 hours is about as the most you'll go, but we try and do it at 3 hours. So that would be three stints. About, you can just figure... an hour for a fuel stint. So you're trying to double stint or triple stint tires if you can. But for sure we'll run 3 hours because it makes for the best rest time. Since Le Mans, it's a maximum of three drivers, you know. Daytona, right. You can use four or five, which mm-hmm. then you could have a lot of time to rest. But Le Mans is only three. So if you only do 2 hours per driver, well, that's only a four-hour break for you. And by the time you get back, get some food, maybe take a shower, change into a fresh set of driver stuff, man, you're already back on deck. So you need that gap so a guy can just get refreshed, you know, get some food in you and do all that. So that seems to be the best way to do it. So you do about three-hour stints.
Do you have to force yourself into that pattern? Because it seems like there's so much adrenaline stuff going on. There's no real sleep. Like, so when you get out, do you have to say to yourself, hey, I've got to hydrate. I've got to get some food because if I don't do it now,
I'm on that front. Yeah, yeah. I'm always hungry. I live my life hungry, so it's not a problem for me. it's more the sleep thing. You know, I did it on an hour and a half sleep last year. And you know, you just gotta, it's tough to do, but it's best if you can get kind of booked up on some sleep going into the week, going into the race day. So, but yeah, it's difficult. I mean, it's just one of those things where you're just basically pulling an all-nighter, but you know, it's not even just 24 hours because remember the race starts at, well, let's just say 3:30.
Starts at 3 this year, by the way.
Between 3 and 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, the morning you get up at, you know, 8 o'clock, if not earlier, to start the day and events and PR things. And so it ends up being, especially for the crew guys, I mean, forget about us, the crew guys are out there getting the car ready. So it turns into about a 50-hour day for those guys.
I would imagine that somebody is addressing this issue we're talking about because, you know, there's lots of studies that say sleep deprivation is as bad as drunk driving.
Yeah.
Like when you're tired, you're not functioning as well as you could. You may be at, you know, you're talking about the cars are running 95%+, but when you're really sleep deprived, you're running at 65%, like maybe. And I would assume that, you know, part of the technology that's in the cars has also got to go toward the drivers. Like there should be a chamber that you guys go to that they just pump in Enya and like ether or something. And you pass out for 5 hours because you getting 4 hours sleep versus getting 45 minutes sleep in the middle of the night. Yeah. That's a different skill.
So yeah. I think, you know, what I learned from all these 24 hour races I've done is to try and pack on that sleep in the days ahead. And you can do it. If you can front load some sleep, but if you do, you know, 4 or 5 hours each night and then try and do that all nighter, it's tough. It's not going to work. So I think it's manageable. You know, you don't feel, especially with the adrenaline, like you'll feel like, oh boy, that's not going to be a lot of sleep. But when you get in the car, it's crazy how you're awake and you're on it. I mean, who knows? Could you be better if you had 8 hours in between stints? Probably, yeah. But I think that's what separates, you know, there's a handful of guys who just, you know, just always end up being good at 24-hour races, you know, just figuring out how to do it. And once you get a system for it, it actually, you know, you don't feel too bad during the period of time. When you get done with the race, especially at Le Mans, because Le Mans it just keeps you on your toes. It's a very fast track. A lot of fast corners. It's super dark in the night. You know, there's a lot of action with cars passing you, you passing cars.
It always rains.
It always rains. I hope not this year, but it always rains.
The year I went, they literally just sort of yellow flagged like the last 10 laps. It was like raining just so hard that they just went like, all right, well, we're going to keep running, but at half speed until we get to 3 o'clock.
That's how they started last year. They started under a safety car because it was raining so hard, they couldn't take the green. So they just rolled cars around under a safety car for about almost an hour, I think.
It's kind of a bummer way to start. It's such an epic race.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a... Yeah,
you know, it seems so physically demanding to do that type of race, but you're in the car for so long. At some point during the car, does it feel like you're getting a little too comfortable and then you got to sort of wake yourself up, you know, just like an alertness, a focus, you know?
I've never been there. especially at Le Mans. You don't get too comfortable there. I mean, so you have a good race car.
So just, your adrenaline is pumping. You're just on.
Yeah.
Like mentally, you're at full throttle the whole time. And that's just got to be physically taxing, like to do that for 3 hours.
Yeah, and you recognize it. Like I said, you don't recognize it till the end. A lot of times at the end of the race, especially at Le Mans, you're just like, wow, that's you just like really coming down. You're like, whew, I'm tired now, you know. And the day after, it can be taxing, you know. But during it, it's never crossed my mind, you know. But again, you know, we're talking about this is what we do, you know. Especially me, I've been doing it for a long time, and you know, all these guys have been doing it for a long time. So you just get used to it, you know. There's something knocks you out of your zone, if you will, your subconscious. Most people call it the zone. Then you have ways of finding your way back in. You know, it could be. Could be, man, something happened, you get flashed by headlights, you have a close call with a prototype or something, and you're like, whoa, that was close. But you can get back into that zone and get going pretty good. So that's the trick. I mean, but, you know, you got to have your routines, you know, whether it's what you eat, how much you eat, what you do in between. You know, a lot of us, we have a massage therapist, like a physio there, so I'll go in between runs and get have her just stretch you out. Because, you know, if you drive 3 hours up and down Interstate 5 here in California or any freeway, right, you just do 3 hours, you're going to be stiff. And that's kind of what you get in a car. You just kind of get, like, locked in. You can't move. You can't, like, turn on one cheek and then turn on the other cheek.
Right.
So you're just kind of stuck in there. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff when you get out of the car, you're like, just kind of stretch it out and
That's why we turned the massager on.
We got the massaging seats in the Lincoln we drove, so we really didn't have that issue.
Still, felt my calf cramping up a little bit because
But I'm going to put that in my next race report.
Please,
just say that car had like 30-way adjustable seats, so they are available from Ford.
So, last question for Johan: who is the? I know. I guess the competition is from within, but other than the GTs. The Ford GTs. Who's is Ferrari? Is Porsche? Like
Corvette?
Corvette. Like, who's up there?
I think this year you're going to see probably the most competitive, if you ask me, of all all the manufacturers together. I think it's going to be really, really close. I think it's going to be. You know, Corvette and Porsche were quick at the test on Sunday, but Ferrari, you know, was the one we were fighting last year, and they have three cars there this year again. So I think it's going to be a real dogfight. I don't know I can put my finger on who's, like, our biggest competition other than our cars, but I can tell you that Corvette's always strong in the long run, no matter what their pace is. They're always strong at 24-hour events.
Yeah.
Porsche is, I think, got one of the quickest cars right now. Not sure if they're going to show everything, but they definitely, I think, have one of the quickest cars, but it's also the newest car of the fleet, so can they do the distance? But they're known to be great in 24 hours also. And the Ferrari is just always there. They're always quick. They just probably have, I would say the Ferrari has the most problems normally of anybody. So you just never know. I think we feel a lot better ourselves going into this year because we feel a lot more sorted out.
Sure.
You know, last year, man, we were coming in there just getting bodywork pieces, and the boys were just figuring out, you know, certain things and how to work on stuff. And, you know, we've come so far since that race last year to now.
Yeah, there is no.
As far as that
goes.
Yeah,
there's no. I mean, as much as you think you can do with a computer and a simulator or a dyno or whatever, it's just you've got to get out and sort the car out.
I think those GTs are badass looking cars on the track. We saw them in Long Beach as well, doing some laps there, and at Goodwood at the Hill Climb, and they're just cool looking cars.
Oh man, aren't they?
It's gotta be exciting.
When it first came out, I was like, I hope it's as badass as it looks, you know, and it's proven to be. I mean, there's. People are going to start seeing the street cars out there, too, now. And those things are really cool.
Leno just got his.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did, yeah.
Oh, and Jack Roush just got his.
Oh.
Yeah, I know Chip got his. So there's those things are going to be rolling around. I tell you, those are going to be head-turners. You roll up, I mean, on top of there's only 250 a year being built.
Yeah.
So when you roll up with one of those, it's going to be, I don't think there's going to be a parking lot full of them.
When are you getting yours?
I'm not sure yet.
Maybe after next weekend. Well, you should ask that question again, right?
Yeah.
See how you do.
I'm still. It's on the table. It's on the table. I'll put it that way. But we're still trying to figure that all out. But you know, it is a very cool car. I was lucky to drive a few weeks ago at Salt Lake City. I got to drive it real hard at the track there and the worldwide media launch, and it is a very fun car to drive. So
the street car you drove, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, street car is really it's a fun car, man. They did a really good job.
The power output's about the same, right, from the race car to the street car.
More than the race car.
I was thinking about because the race car has limitations.
Yeah.
Class limitations. We have this balanced performance, so they're always they can take boost away and give it and stuff like that. Weight, no more weight, less weight on the car. But yeah, so the street car is 647 horsepower. That's from what I know of ours. That's over 100 horsepower more than we have in the race car.
Yeah.
So when I was driving the street car a couple weeks ago, I was like, man. It puts you in your seat, like, brr, brr, you're just accelerating every pull of gear. So I wrote to my guys, like, hey, this power's a lot better. I like it.
But, yeah, the tires are cold.
Also, the seat's a little more comfortable, and the air works.
Yeah, nothing you can do about it. It's just part of the racing. You know, that's what makes this GT class in the race series so cool is that, you know, they're trying to balance it so that it makes a good show for the fans, and that's, you know. That's the way it is.
Joey Han Racing is where you can go. That's the website. The race, 3 p.m. June 17th and 18th. We'll be watching.
You guys need to watch this. Ford Performance is Ford Performance TV.tv. And it's live stream of all of our cars on board. It's really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's how my family watches here. They'll just watch the onboard, especially my son. He loves watching. You can watch every lap. The whole race, 24 hours.
That'll be awesome.
From the inside of the car.
Yeah. Shut it off when you get the massage, though. I don't know if your wife wants to watch it.
Yeah. I'll take my GoPro off my hat.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joey Han.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck, man.
Pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. See you. All right, Joey Han, everybody. Yeah, we'll be watching that.
Sounds like a lot of work.
It sounds cool. Like, now, you know,
the whole team, that's a lot of work.
The thing that always strikes me is the Ford looks like a prototype, mm-hmm. whereas the 911 looks like a 911. The vet really looks like a vet. Like, it seems to have an advantage because you look at that Ford and you go, well, that's in the prototype class. And then you look at the vet and you go, is that stock? And the 911 looks like a 911, and the Ferrari, 488 or whatever, or it's a new one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
I think it's 488.
It looks like it looks.
Yeah, it's not that much.
Right. It looks kind of like a street car.
Yeah.
But then this thing pulls up.
It's funny because the Ford GT, we've seen it in race trim before really even seeing it in street trim. So now when you see the street car, you're like, oh, that looks like the race car.
Right.
You know, instead of the other way around.
Right. It's always the other way around. All right. Let's see. Evan's been on hold for a while. Evan, 29, Columbus, Ohio.
Hey, man. It's great to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you again, Evan.
Yeah, I was one of the top contributors for Road Hard, and after the show at Amalfi, you finished your beer, told everybody goodnight, you walked over, and you hugged me. That's one of the best memories of my life.
Wow, nice. Thanks.
Yeah, I'll never forget that, man.
Never hugs me.
Chris is still waiting on his hug. Yeah, thanks, man.
I got to talk to Mike August. Mike August is a great guy.
He is. Unless you're getting an angry, confused email from him.
But that's four words long.
Yeah, but what's going on in your life, Evan?
Well, I just moved out and about 2 months ago, and the day after I moved out, my father bought my favorite car. He bought a 2016 Plum Crazy Purple Dodge Challenger.
Mm, nice.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. I love that car. And he tells me when he dies, I can have it.
Well, let's hope it's not behind the wheel.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
The car caught on fire. Anyway, when we're done removing your dad from it.
And you can have what's left.
Well, where should we send the flatbed? Yeah. All right. So, right.
My question was, is this the type of car that tends to go down in value or up in value or stay the same?
I think it will go down initially and then it'll come back up again, like what happens to all cars. Unless, I like the Plum Crazy Purple It depends. I don't know if he got options. You know, obviously optioned up is a good thing. You know, I don't know if the car's a
manual. There's probably not a lot in that color.
Shift.
So that's kind of cool.
I see more orange ones than I see in black.
And black.
Yeah, it's, black. Black's not a good color. The purple's good. So
I'm going to have to learn how to drive a stick.
That's all right. Oh, it's good. I'm glad that it's a stick.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if most of them are stick or most of them are automatic. The point is this. You look after the car. Hopefully dad's around for a good long time. Dad'll own the car when it's on the way down. And then by the time he dies peacefully in the arms of his third wife, he will then give the car to you when it's on its way up.
Yeah. Yeah. And by then you'll know how to drive stick.
Yeah.
Well, I'm working on it, and I'm just not very good with it. I drive a Ford truck. We live out in the country. Well, I used to live out in the country, so I had a truck, and it's just automatic, so I never had the opportunity, and there's no way in hell he's going to let me drive this thing to learn.
Well, you know, you can, as I famously told everyone, I taught a model to drive on a stick on a Viper, you know?
Yeah.
You can do it. It's just push that clutch in when you run into trouble. That's all.
Voltaire.
That's all.
Great.
Thanks, Evan.
Hey, before you let me go, can I ask one favor?
Yeah.
Can I put my Twitter?
What?
Can I put my Twitter out?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm at real Evan Archer. There's like 30 Evan Archers, but I'm the only real one I've decided.
Okay.
And it's mostly comedy-based. But thank you so much for talking to me. I can't wait to see what movies you come out with next, man.
Oh, thanks, Evan. I appreciate it. Well, we got, obviously, 24 Hour Wars out, the Newman Doc's out. Willie T. Ribbs is...
Coming soon?
Coming soon. It's getting pretty close. I saw about a 50-minute version of it the other night.
Yeah.
It's looking good. Amsoil. Move beyond stock performance. Amsoil synthetic motor oil combines top-tier synthetic technology with unique additives to protect up to 25,000 miles or 1 year in between oil changes. Shields engines from wear and deposits, wear on pistons and cams, and that leads to loss of power, everybody. You don't want that loss of power, do you? No. We love...
I don't.
Amsoil over here. We love lubrication, but especially the best. 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by the industry standard. Piston cleanliness, next to godliness, 93% above the industry standard. Tested in the field and on the track in extreme conditions. So what should you do? Go to Amsoil, AMSOIL, AmsOil.com/carcast. Get more information. Amsoil, devoted to protection.
Yep.
All right, last call here. Alex, 32, Washington, D.C.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Quick tire pressure question. Getting hotter out here in D.C., and I'm pretty diligent about keeping my tires right at like 34 as the owner's manual states, but it's gone up like 8 pounds. Like, I checked the monitor on my dashboard, like 45, you know, 44 pounds. Is that heat related? And I can bleed, you know, I bleed air out of them, but it goes back up every time. What can I do to kind of manage the correct tire pressure throughout the summer?
Why don't you, because you're you and you seem like you're into it, why don't you go for some nitrogen?
Yeah, you could do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard that. That's not a gimmick like rust-proofing thing, right? It has a purpose, correct?
It does. I mean, first off, if all race cars do it, serious race cars do it, then it's not a gimmick.
It allows you to keep pressure pretty consistent as the tire temperatures change drastically.
Right. So you're the kind of guy, you know, if I was talking to my wife, I don't think I would bring this up, but for
she
you...
Might.
She'd probably bring it up.
She'd probably bring it up.
But, hey, but I wanted to talk to you about nitrogen. I don't have time. I'm watching my stories. But I think you should go for some nitrogen. And I don't know a ton about it, but I imagine you could just go online, find some tire, performance tire place or whatever that had that service. And for some sort of nominal one-time whatever,
yeah,
you'd just go get your nitrogen.
Yeah, it's probably not that expensive to do. It's probably super cheap to do. And, I mean, I don't know how available it is in your area, but we do have it around here. I know guys who go out and do it.
Yeah.
And all the GTRs, the Nissan GTRs, I believe, came that way.
Yeah. So let's go nitrogen.
That definitely sounds good. I'll seek that out. Hey, one quick question. What do you think about this one? You honk at the person in front of you for not moving or whatever reason, and they try and honk back in reverse. Never works, right? It's silly.
There's the reverse honk I like. Now, obviously, it doesn't work at all if someone's in front of them.
Yeah.
But the back at you honk is a weird.
It's a weird thing.
It's a weird. It's kind of like a boomer honk.
Yeah.
It's like a boomerang. Yeah. Just comes back to you, but it doesn't really work because it's sort of like they're just honking into the heavens.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I agree.
Exactly. We're all doomed. Thanks, boys.
We're all doomed. That's right. But at least next time you honk, you'll have some nitrogen in your car tires.
I love the horn, by the way. I honk at everything. Mostly because it just confuses people because I'm not really honking for any real reason.
My biggest move so that weird. People hate is if I'm sitting in a passenger seat and the guy in front of us isn't moving and you're not honking, I reach over and honk
all the time.
For you,
yeah, all
which
the time.
Is my move.
What are you doing?
And then you yell.
Yeah.
Which the guy can't hear.
They're holding us up, man. God can hear it. You know what else God wants you to do? He wants you to go online, see if you can save some money on your auto insurance at geico.com. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Look, everyone's got stuff to do. Why not just add this to your to-do list? Saving money on your auto insurance over at Geico. So you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to take off your bathrobe or slippers. Just fire up the computer. Go to geico.com. Spend a few minutes and find out just how much they could be saving you on your auto insurance.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see. You can go to check out No Safe Spaces, me and Dennis Prager, new material up there all the time, contribute and be a part of this fabulous project. Also, we're doing a Reasonable Doubt Town Hall coming up July 20th. You get tickets at AdamCarolla.com, Shift and Steer. That's Matt's podcast. Check that out. And you can go to shiftandsteer.com. You can get your podcast.
We're going to be at the SoCal Speed Shop open house event.
Lots of good stuff. Lots of material coming your way. Just go to AdamCarolla.com. We're doing a live podcast this Thursday, Irvine Improv. Jump on that. Always sells out. Levity Live in Oxnard coming up July 6th. Caesar's Palace, Cleopatra's Barge, man. That's Thursday, July 13th. So come on out. We have fun in Vegas. And Corolla drinks and all that kind of stuff. Chassis, Chassy. Go there and check out. Lots of material up there. I think we're getting some shirts and mugs and stuff like that. So till next time. Adam Corolla for Matt, the moderator. DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.